what's happening is very much like what was occurring at the end of 2007 after the Bear Stearns collapse. Because when Bear went under, they said, oh, we'll fix it, someone else will take them over, we'll patch things up, it'll be okay. But they knew it wasn't okay. Now, what we estimate since September 15th, over $500 billion, maybe as much as $600 or $700 billion has been pumped into these short-term overnight markets for banks to have available. Now, last time I talked to you, we talked about Carney and BlackRock putting forward a strategy for a banker's dictatorship. This is what it is. He's saying that if your firm does not adhere to these disclosure rules, you will be cut off from credit. This is designed to get people to willingly carry out austerity in order to have enough money to pay for food and rent. That's what's happening. This financial crisis is coming on us like an avalanche, and there's no coverage.
I am proud to offer another great product, ProxyStem Stem Cell Pro. This amazing product supports 8 areas of stem cell health, including the AMPK gene, which in a UCLA study, researchers showed in an animal model that by increasing the amount of AMPK in the body, they can increase a healthy lifespan by approximately 30%. mTOR inhibition. The mTOR inhibition has extended mouse mean lifespan by 33%. Also, biogenesis. The additional PQQ triggers mitochondrial biogenesis, which increases the number of mitochondria in your cells. These are the powerhouses of your cells. The energy-hungry brain and heart is believed to benefit greatly from PQQ. ProxyStem ingredients also increases the amount of telomerase protein that cells make when they're in a state of telomerase activation. With all the healthy cell benefits, this formula is the most advanced formula we have seen on the market. Also, with RevGenetics' brand new formula, it comes in a lower price. This means you're getting the best price anywhere for this product. Click the link below to see studies and to buy yours today. Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have Harley Schlinger coming back to the program. This is one of the most important interviews I've done in a while. The Federal Reserve has been pumping $75 billion into the economy since September 15th. And in fact, they've done more than $75 billion. I believe one day they did $125 billion. This infusion is intended to continue until October 10th, and who knows if they're actually going to stop it. There has been a virtual blackout in the mainstream media about this activity and what it really means. Yeah, they might have been covering it, but they're not really covering it, I don't believe. This is a big deal, and it's important that people are aware of what is really going on. The call to impeach Trump is a very convenient distraction to this activity, although I don't believe it's just a distraction. Harley and I talked about this about a month ago, but there has been a lot more development since on what they have planned. They're actually moving forward and implementing things. This interview ties everything together from the actions of the Fed to the Green New Deal, the movement towards socialism and communism, and the impeachment activities of Trump. Hopefully you'll watch this to the end, as Harley always has a way of bringing a message of hope and what we can do to change the situation. We have more power than we realize to make a difference and to change this around. We really do. Harley also has a research report from the Roche PAC that discusses the real intentions of the Green New Deal that we discuss a bit on this program. You can get a copy of that at Harley's La Roche PAC blog and website, which I will have a link below for you. I will also include this for my Patreons on my Patreon channel, so just look for the report there if you are a Patreon. If you're not, you can always sign up. The link is below. There's exclusive books and research and interviews and all sorts of things. You also get notifications of my shows, which I know that a lot of people are not being notified of new shows that come on. So let's now get into this important discussion with Harley Schlinger. Harley, thank you so much for rejoining the program.
Oh, I'm happy to be with you, Sarah.
We have some serious stuff going on, and surprise, surprise, the mass media, of course, the lamestream media, is not covering it. And it's, you know, some of the the Bitcoin and the cryptocurrencies will cover it, but they kind of do it from their own angle. I've seen a couple articles, but in general, people aren't covering it. They did the first couple of days, but the Fed is infusing $75 billion, and I guess they did over $125 billion one of these days, starting at September 15th, and they're doing it through October 10th. I mean, at this rate, it's more than what Congress approved in 2008 to be infused into the economy. Obviously, the Fed did more behind the scenes, but I mean, this is a serious event that's just black. Can you talk about what is really going on here?
Sure. I mean, what they're saying is there's a liquidity crunch. And by liquidity crunch, what they mean is that the banks on a day-to-day basis either don't have the money or won't make the money available to customers who need short-term money for fixing the books overnight. And so there's something called repo markets, where corporations and clients can go to borrow short-term funds, and this is not available right now. Now, some of these banks that are doing this have plenty of cash on hand. Why are they not making it available? As you pointed out earlier, they can make money by doing it because the interest rates on these markets are going up. You know, the Fed is trying to keep interest at around 2.5% or 2.25%. And the interest is going up to 3%, 4%, even 5% on these short-term overnight loans. So why won't they do it? There's obviously trouble in the big banks. And so as a result, they went to the Fed and they said, help us out quickly. And this is the first time in over a decade that the Fed is directly injecting money into these markets. And at first, it was on a 24-hour basis. Then in some cases, it's now up to 3 to 4 days. Now, the question is, how are they going to stop on October 10th? What's going to change on October 10th? And nobody seems to know. And as you say, the reason there's darkness in the mainstream media is that since they obviously can't control the process, they're afraid there'll be panic if they go out and talk about it at all.
Well, that's kind of what and I don't want you to continue, but I also want to throw in there the Fed, the chairman, Jay Powell, made every effort to downplay the severity of this action. This is his quote. He said, while these issues are important for market functioning and market participants, they have no implications for the economy or the stance of the monetary policy. I mean, that's a lie.
Well, it sounds a lot like Hank Paulson and Ben Bernanke in the summer of 2008. I mean, what's happening is very much like what was occurring at the end of 2007 after the Bear Stearns collapse. Because when Bear went under, they said, oh, we'll fix it. Someone else will take them over. We'll patch things up. It'll be okay. But they knew it wasn't okay. And so they, behind the scenes, were in a panic mode throughout most of 2008, even as they were saying, everything's fine. Don't worry. We've got it under control. Now, what happens in a situation like this is that the panic can spread very quickly, but the big players are the ones who have the responsibility to try and calm it down. And so they get whatever funds they want. Now, what we estimate since September 15th, over $500 billion, maybe as much as $600 or $700 billion has been pumped into these short-term overnight markets for banks to have available. The Fed is now talking about, in a sense, a return to quantitative easing. Only this time, instead of buying just treasuries from banks, they're going to buy corporate bonds, stocks, virtually anything. Now, the problem is, as you can read occasionally in the Wall Street Journal or Bloomberg covers it once in a while, they've run out of tools. They don't know what to do. They tried low interest rates, quantitative easing, negative interest rates, none of it worked. It worked to keep the bubble going. But even the bubble shows signs of popping. And what's going on underneath it is a dramatic slowdown of the real economy. LaRouche described this in 1997 with his triple curve theory, where he talked about what happens when financial aggregates and monetary aggregates cross, and you now have financial aggregates extremely high and not enough money to back them. So they create increased monetary aggregates. But all that money, where does it go? It goes into new forms of speculation. Meanwhile, the third curve, the curve of money going into production, investment into real economy, is on a rapid downward slant. That is unsustainable. And LaRouche used that triple curve to forecast in July 2007 that we were heading toward a banking collapse sometime within the next year. And he was absolutely right.
Well, and so we have the same, but we never fixed the underlying fundamentals. All we did is, and then we continued doing the same crap. I mean, all we did is patch it over. They always said kick the can down the road, but they patched it over and then started doing the derivatives and everything else they were doing in hyperspeed. I mean, they didn't learn from it. It's as if they want to correct, they're going to take advantage as long as they can while they can milk this economy and then let it go.
Well, here's where you get to something beyond economic theory, monetary theory, you know, so-called modern monetary theory, where you can create debt as much as you need to so-called stimulate the economy. But what are they stimulating? They're stimulating speculation. And the more speculation you create, the more demand there is for more risk. And so money will flow into the highest risk because that's where the highest return is. But that's also where the greatest danger is. Now, if you have a guarantee that you'll be bailed out, which happened after 2008, then they'll continue to speculate. If they don't think they're going to get the guarantee, then the whole thing will topple, will implode. And that's where we are right now, heading toward that kind of implosion. Now, what they did after 2008 is bail out the speculators and cut back more on the real economy. They came up with certain kinds of rules that never were really implemented, like the Volcker rule to regulate derivatives. They never did that. The result is that we have more debt today and more leverage today in the economy than we did when it blew out in 2008. So you're right, Sarah.
That's what I mean.
You kick the can down the road. You don't solve the problem.
Well, but am I right that it almost seems like they're milking it for they're squeezing every ounce of life out of it and then protected themselves, and if it falls, it falls? I mean, it seems like they're so reckless that and so blind to what needs to be done that, you know, for someone like me that's been watching it, you know, very closely for 10 years, they just squeezed that turn up for everything it could get.
On the surface, you're right. And they're doing that on a case-by-case basis to stay alive. That's a survival strategy. But they're moving toward a radical restructuring of the whole global economy. And that's what I wrote about in my article on what Mark Carney, the governor of the Bank of England, presented at the UN climate conference. Because you can't look at this now without understanding they do have a fallback option to create a new bubble that can last maybe for another year or two. But the new bubble comes with a new approach to economics. Now, if I can just take a second to go through this, I mean, what everyone paid attention to was this young Swedish poor character, Greta Thunberg, who's lecturing, screaming, crying, you know, you, shame on you, you've taken my childhood, and lecturing everybody. And the people they're lecturing are sitting there just lapping it up, you know, as though they're excited to be lectured by a 16-year-old who knows nothing. But behind the scenes, she's just the front man, the circus barker,
yes,
the bearded lady that brings people in. The real speech was given by Mark Carney, the head of the Bank of England. Why is he speaking at the climate conference? Well, what he reported is that since 2017, the major banks have been involved in an ongoing negotiation to establish a climate-based financial system. And Carney had an op-ed he said there were 34 central bankers and bank supervisors that set up a coalition of the willing for what they called a network for greening the financial system. They even gave it initials. It's NGFS, Network for Greening the Financial System. In an op-ed on April 17th in The Guardian, Carney wrote, "The financial sector must be at the heart of tackling climate change." So then he comes to New York. And what Carney said is that there are now 130 banks that have brought together a coalition which includes accounting firms, rating agencies, pension funds, all the financial players, to make an agreement, a compact, he called it, for green financial investment. And he said they've set up a task force for climate-related financial disclosures, that from now on, every bank, in order to get money from the central bank, will have to pass a test that shows that it's investing money only in carbon-neutral or carbon-negative investments. And these are banks that total $120 trillion in their asset base. Now, let me read a quote, because this is somewhat blood-curdling if you think about it, if you know how these bankers think. Carney told the group, "Firms that align their business models to the transition to a net zero carbon world will be rewarded handsomely. Those that fail to adapt these measures will cease to exist." Now, last time I talked to you, we talked about Carney and BlackRock putting forward a strategy for a banker's dictatorship. This is what it is. He's saying that if your firm does not adhere to these disclosure rules, you will be cut off from credit.
Can I ask you, this can happen overnight to firms. And is this the another year bubble that you're talking about, the bridge to their digital currency or whatever else that they're planning to really take the control?
Yeah.
Okay, keep going.
Well, the bubble took another step forward today when the Bank for International Settlements put out a press release saying that they have now set up a green bond fund initiative. And they said the purpose is to green the financial system. Now, what this means is that they're not just aiming at shutting down coal-fired energy production or oil and gas and nuclear, which in itself is insane, what they're talking about. They're talking about every company that's involved in some way in carbon-related products. Now, do you know it's impossible to make something industrially without some carbon process in the way?
How are they going to get, how are they going to get the cooperation? I mean, people are going to be up in arms. I mean, overnight, they're going to be shutting down, cutting off banking for so many important companies to our entire, business ecosystem. How does that even work?
You know, here's the point. You would think there would be an outcry and a rebellion against this. That's why they're keeping it quiet for the most part. But look what's happened the last 10 years. How hard is it for local businesses to get loans? How hard is it for entrepreneurs, unless they have some pathway into Silicon Valley, to get funding for new technologies, for research and development? Even major corporations are not able to bring out new lines of products because they can't get credit. Well, have they been fighting it? They're privately, the industrial associations, manufacturers associations, construction industry, they're screaming bloody murder at their conferences, but who hears it? Now, they've had meetings with President Trump. The local and regional bank managers have met with Trump, and Trump said, we're going to have to deal with Dodd-Frank, we're going to have to deal with some of these things. But so far, nothing's been done. I'm sitting here in Germany, where the auto sector, which one out of three jobs in Germany is dependent on the automobile sector, it's about to be devastated. You have the suit against Volkswagen, the shutdown of diesel. Remember, 5 years ago, everyone was supposed to go to diesel cars, and now they say diesel is the worst pollutant on the planet.
God, they don't. And you can eat beef now, too, by the way. They came back out and said beef is good the other day. But keep going. It's so dumb.
Well, this is where we see the use of ideology and the use of really brainwashing. Because the people who are doing this, and we just wrote a special report called CO2 Reduction is a Mass Murder Policy Designed by City of London and Wall Street. They've been at this since 2017, as Carney admitted. So how long have we heard of Greta? She started last winter with her school strikes. She's just a front. They have had this plan for a long time. They've been looking for an excuse, looking for a front man. They're using her. But they're intending a global restructuring that aims at shutting down industry, shutting down manufacturing, And literally, this will lead to massive population reduction. And by the way, the people pushing these policies know it and support it.
When do you think, I mean, because right now they're start, this is starting, and this bubble, it will run for another year, and we won't, will we feel it within, I mean, we're going to start feeling it soon. I mean, this is serious. These businesses, I'm getting a little bit of anxiety hearing about what they're going through, because I remember going through this in 2008. I was running a company in 2008. I was miserable. It was terrible. The stress was over the top. And now I'm just feeling for all these people trying to run their companies, care about all their employees that have mortgages and healthcare, and they know that the fire, the house of cards is going down because these assholes are shutting them off when they have a perfectly viable business that's helping society.
Well, from the standpoint of the Green Financial Initiative, having a profitable business that's producing something that people need is no longer a requirement to get credit. It's that you have to be doing something that doesn't disturb nature. And what we're seeing, for example, in Germany, the Merkel government, which is about as popular as smallpox, has come out with a new green policy. Merkel's going to be reliant on the Greens in her government now. And the Christian Democrats have become a green party. What they're proposing is a 10 cent a liter carbon tax on gasoline. They're talking about increasing the taxes on rail tickets, on airplane tickets, a major increase in airplane fuel costs. They're talking about taxing you for the miles or the kilometers that you drive. This is also in discussion in the United States that in addition to the gases, the tax you pay on gasoline, you're going to have to pay an extra tax if you go over 1,000 miles a month or a certain designated amount of driving. This is designed to get people to willingly carry out austerity in order to have enough money to pay for food and rent. That's what's happening. And people
So
are being.
how, go ahead. I have so many more questions, but go ahead. Don't want to cut you off.
Well, let me just throw out one name that people should keep in the back of their minds. At the center of a lot of this planning is something called the Tavistock Institute in London. It's a brainwashing institute. They've been doing studies for years on what they call cultural or national studies to find out what are the characteristics of populations, what are their vulnerabilities, what are their fears, how can they be manipulated, and how can you accomplish something like the old story of if you drop a frog in boiling water, it'll jump out. But if you put the frog in the water and slowly raise the heat, it will sit there until it's cooked. They're doing this kind of planning with populations.
Well, and if they start teaching socialism, I was watching a KGB officer that defected from the Soviet Union, and they were saying that they were purposely, he's like, I can totally see it. And I can't pronounce his name, even if I wanted to. And he's like, it's been going on for decades. They're putting it in our schools. So socialism, which he says is just a, it's communism, you know, it's really, and they've been doing it for decades. And now the people that got that, they were never challenged in the schools by what our American values are. Now they're the ones running our country. And he goes, you can drag those people to show them the concentration camps, and they still won't believe that this is not the system that you think it is. And those people, the social justice warriors, are going to be the first people that are going to be killed, he says, because when they realize that this is nothing about justice, this is the worst injustice you're ever going to see, they're going to be completely disillusioned, and they're going to be the hardest to control. And
Well,
that's what he's saying. And go ahead.
think about the movement that Greta Thunberg was set up to lead, a children's crusade. You take children who know nothing and you convince them that if their parents turn the heat on in the winter or the air conditioning on in the summer or drive somewhere, that you're going to kill the planet and that you may have only 12 years or 10 years or, as Prince Charles said, 18 months before it becomes impossible to save civilization. Suppose that's reinforced by the television. Suppose it's reinforced by social networking and media, and you take vulnerable children who know nothing about galactic cycles, solar cycles, like the Earth's magnetic spin, solar radiation. They know nothing about that. They're not taught that. And you get activist journalists who call themselves climate scientists now, who go out and spread this stuff. And under those circumstances, they think they can scare the American population into willingly accepting an absolute reduction of living standards and a loss of freedoms. Now, will it happen? I'll tell you the honest truth is this is why we're seeing a new phase in the impeachment campaign against Donald Trump. And, you know, I hate to make it think as though I'm jumping from subject to subject.
No. I see this connection too. Yes.
The Green New Deal is directly related to the financial collapse, and the Green New Deal and the emergence of Ocasio-Cortez, the hardcore leftist faction in the Democratic Party, which, by the way, in many issues is tied to the neoconservatives in the Republican Party. I don't know if you saw this, but the Washington Post and MSNBC both praised a speech the other day by John Bolton, where Bolton attacked Trump on the North Korea policy. So now you have the liberals praising the warmongers in the Republican Party. Now,
the liberals are. The Democratic Party has turned into the war party.
Yeah, they have.
They're the ones wanting more, yes.
And there are still some Republicans who are with them on it, but not the president. Now, here's the point I would like to make, because a lot of people have soured on Trump. They think Trump hasn't delivered on his promises. He's not a good guy. Maybe he's part of the system. Maybe the Rothschilds bailed him out over and over and over so that he could become president. You know, I think people have to get a life and actually think about what's happening. If he were part of this, why are they trying so hard to destroy him?
And I think it's twofold. Let me tell you a little bit. I'm going to throw this into the picture too. Adam Schiff, I've just heard, is highly compromised. And there's a lot more behind that. I think it's a twofold thing. I think it's this Federal Reserve, which obviously is the main, you got to look at this. And then I think it's the human compromise. He can't get crap done because all these people are compromised. So he's fixing that blackmailing, the Jeffrey Epstein, all that stuff that's getting these people to make decisions that are really bad for them, their family, and for us. And he's trying to stop this Federal Reserve. It's this, you can't get policymakers to make good decisions if they're all blackmailed. So he's trying to clean that up and stop this at the same time. So that impeachment is happening because of all of that.
Well, here's just a quick chronology. 2.5 years of Russiagate and Mueller prevented Trump from following through on some very promising initiatives he was taking with North Korea, with the Chinese, with the Russians, you know, even with Iran. You know, you had Bolton on the inside, in some cases Pompeo opposing him, undermining him. You had some of the Republicans like Paul Ryan when he was still there in the House. Ryan sabotaged Trump's efforts to pull together an infrastructure program, which would have been absolutely essential for investment in the real economy. But they used Russiagate to tie his hands. Now, Russiagate collapsed because it was a fraud from the beginning. And in fact, now what Trump is trying to do is to show that this was foreign intelligence agencies being brought in by the Democratic Party, by the Obama administration, to run a slander and a destruction operation against him. You had the British who started it with GCHQ coming over claiming they had evidence the Russians were about to interfere in the election. Then you had Christopher Steele, former MI6, providing a fake document which was about sexual blackmail against Trump that went to Brennan, to Comey, and others. Now, then you had a sting operation run by the FBI, by, for example, Joseph Mifsud, who met with Papadopoulos and with Carter Page. Mifsud was protected in Italy for a while, so that's why Barr and Durham went over to Italy to find out what they could on that. They went to Ukraine because a lot of these operations were run through anti-Russian Ukrainian networks against Trump. And then they went to Australia because of the role of Downer, the high commissioner from Australia to the United Kingdom, who claimed that Papadopoulos came to him and told him about Russian interference in the election. So this whole operation was a fraud, and Trump fought it gallantly with very little support from the Republican Party. A few people like Nunes and Jim Jordan and Matt Gaetz fought quite effectively. We were on this from the beginning because we understood, because of LaRouche's understanding of the British Empire, how they had taken over the Obama administration. Now, where does Biden fit in on this? This is really interesting. People have to avoid the desire just to get in on this thing that Biden and his son are corrupt. Of course they are. Was his son on a payroll of a bunch of oligarchs who were no damn good in Ukraine? Of course. But there's a deeper issue. Joe Biden was the point man for Obama in the coup in February 2014 that overthrew the elected government in Ukraine and did it in collaboration with Nazi militia in Ukraine, people who absolutely identify with the Ukrainian Nazi movement from World War II that now run the defense ministry in Ukraine, and who in the United States was involved. The neoconservatives like Victoria Nuland, who worked under Hillary and then under John Kerry, George Soros networks who were funding the operation, the National Endowment for Democracy. And what was the reason for overthrowing the government of Ukraine? To drive a wedge deeper between the United States and Russia on behalf of old-fashioned British geopolitics. Now, let me mention one other name in Ukraine, which is very interesting. I'm sure your listeners don't know this. Christopher Steele, who, with money from the Clinton campaign, wrote the dossier that was being used to blackmail Trump and get him to quit the presidency when Comey went to visit him, or at least to submit to the blackmail. Christopher Steele was in Kiev in 2014. What was he doing there? He was sending messages to the State Department about the vulnerabilities in Ukraine, how to pull off the coup, how the United States should be working. And he sent these memos to a man named Jonathan Weiner, who was a top assistant to John Kerry. So Weiner then later was the person who introduced Christopher Steele to some of the FBI operatives and vouched for him, which led to the whole FISA corruption, the corruption in the FISA court by Comey and others. So the whole Russiagate had a foreign element, which was British, Ukrainian, Australian, and Italian. And now the New York Times is telling us that Trump is committing impeachable offenses, as are Attorney General Barr, Durham, and others, by questioning governments, those governments, to ask them what they know about these operations.
Well, and, so, you know, but I got to throw this in there. There is a treaty that allows us to do that. So it's just ridiculous.
What would you call counterterrorism cooperation? Where we go to countries to find out not just what they know, but are they in some way helping the terrorists? You know, this is just natural statecraft.
Well, especially the role that he was playing. If he doesn't question it, then he's not doing his job. Basically, he must talk to them, him must talk to the president of Ukraine about this. Otherwise, he's not doing his job. If he didn't question him, then he wouldn't be doing his job. And these people they're spinning it. And it's so hard to hear this because the American people are so ignorant and so manipulated and so brainwashed that they can, I don't know if, I mean, they're losing a lot more people when they do something that's this stupid, but there's still a large percentage of people that will just fall in line. This impeachment crap.
Well, here's a perfect example. Remember when Trump went to the Helsinki summit with Putin? And what was the topic they took up? Nuclear arms control. The same way Ronald Reagan took it up. The same way Democrats in the past took it up, John Kennedy and others. The idea that let's see if we can reach agreements so that we don't spend so much money on weapons that can wipe out the planet 25 times over. So Trump and Putin discussed this. And they came out at their press conference and said, one of the things we talked about was how to avoid a situation where the United States is spending $750 billion a year on fighting wars and building weapons, when that money should be going to education, healthcare, infrastructure, and so on. What did the media focus on? They focused on Trump talking to Putin and not holding Putin responsible for something he didn't do, namely hack the election. And so that became another whole part of the narrative.
That's the treasonous part of our press. I mean, everyone is working against the benefit of the people. And it's to a point where I don't know why anybody listens to them anymore when they do things like that. How can you respect them at all? And the other thing is, how can the people inside those organizations respect themselves for doing that? You know, I mean,
I think Rachel Maddow respects herself because she's making a lot of money while she's pulling a con. You know, they were all exposed. Did they apologize? Did they say I was wrong? No, of course not, because they continued to make money, even as their audience shrank. But Sarah, this gets to the whole point that you started with, that this financial crisis is coming on us like an avalanche and there's no coverage. You know, I spend some time in Austria, and when people are afraid of an avalanche, you hear booms go off because they try to bring down the snow in a controlled way so it doesn't come down in an avalanche and wipe out cities and villages. Here we have no advance warning. We're being hit, bombarded with lies from the media and lies from the politicians. I mean, you mentioned Adam Schiff. That's a perfect example. He made up his own fictional account of the transcript of the call that Trump had with Zelensky.
Just made it up and totally different. It was completely different than what it really was, and if Trump really said what he said, okay, then maybe. But it was completely fabricated.
I think Schiff should be put up for a Pulitzer Prize for fiction writing. But, you know, when you look at this...
Well, he's under an ethics violation. They're trying to do a probe on that, but it's just incredible.
Well,
keep going.
So here's what I think is most important, is that people can put together, if they think about it, they can put together how we're being hit on the one side with lies about the economy, that it's all right, things are fine, your stocks are doing fine, don't worry about it, everything's going to work out. Or the people who have the so-called long-term approach, they say, well, in the long run, the market always comes back. Yeah, but in the short run, people lose houses, they lose health insurance, they lose their lives because of the policies of the central bankers. Then you see the central bankers conniving with the green operation. And you see all of this as the new policy. Why go after Trump? Because Trump would not go along with the green policy. Trump pulled us out of the Paris Climate Conference.
Let's talk about this
John
green policy.
Kerry,
keep going. Say the rest of what you need to say, and then I want to dive into the elephant in the room.
Okay.
As if there isn't more elephants
Kerry
in the room.
At the UN Climate Summit, I'm just going to work you up, Sarah. at the UN Climate Summit, John Kerry said, he said, we need a coalition of the willing that can fight the axis of climate deniers. Now, who are the four countries Kerry said are climate deniers? The U.S., China, Russia, and India. Now, these are three countries that Trump wants to work with. That Trump, when he came into office, said, we want to be friends and work with Putin. We want to work with China. He's been sabotaged on the China front, sabotaged on the Russia front. They're now trying to sabotage what he's doing on India. What's so important about those three countries? They're having real economic growth. They are buying gold. Their debt is relatively small compared to their physical production. Whereas we are increasing debt at alarming rates while we're undercutting and shutting down our real production. So the natural alliance for the United States in the future is not with the European Union or the City of London, which are collapsing, but to work with the Eurasian countries. And then Europe and others will come along. But this is what they fear, is that at the point of a collapse, Trump will turn on the Federal Reserve and the central banks. Trump may go in the direction that LaRouche has proposed, with separation of banking, with massive infrastructure spending, with research and development, and an alliance with countries that are actually building. And that would sabotage him.
Yeah, it would sabotage the greedy bankers that just care about themselves, but it would actually build a long-term infrastructure for centuries. I mean, this is century-defining.
Well, you see, one of the reasons I worked with Lyndon LaRouche for so many years is that LaRouche always told us, look at the big picture and think at least two or three generations ahead, because that's what the British do. The British operate from the big picture. They look at the vulnerabilities, where they can move. but they have a goal. You know, it was Palmerston, the foreign minister under Queen Victoria at the height of British imperialism, who once said, "We have no permanent friends, only permanent interests." That's how they operate. And British geopolitics is, how can you pit countries against each other so that they will not be able to challenge the globalization plans of the empire? Now, what do we see today? What they hate about Trump is he believes in national sovereignty, that nations should elect governments which act in the interests of their people. Well, what happens when nations reject the establishment's people, like in Italy or with Brexit? They try to change the rules. They're for democracy until the democratic vote turns against them.
Yeah, exactly.
Then they're for regime change, just like in the United States now.
Well, let's talk about this Green Deal. We got this bubble going on until we get to what they really want to implement. And you have this new report out, LaRouche, and it's actually very daunting, because CO2, the elephant in the room is the science behind their climate change agenda is bogus, right? We all know it has to. We do have pollution issues. There's islands of pollution, sure, in the ocean, and we do have issues where certain species, big species, are at risk of extinction. I mean, we got issues. But this whole climate change is based on bogus science. And you gotta, like you were saying before, you gotta look at the solar system, you gotta look at magnetics, you gotta look at all these other things. And the CO2 is life. We need CO2. So talk about your new report and what this reduction in CO2 could do to it. I mean, it's crazy. I had somebody on who was a researcher it was like 4 years ago, talking about and he had input from researchers from Princeton and Stanford. I mean, it was, scientists know this, but they're afraid to talk. And they need to start talking, because this is serious. So talk about what your report explains.
Well, just on that point, 500 top scientists who are actual scientists, physicists, astrophysics people, just put out a statement saying there is no climate emergency. And they're calling on governments to allow a debate to occur. And what hasn't happened is that there hasn't been an honest debate. In fact, the line from the green people is that the science is settled.
Oh,
the science is never settled.
The science is settled. That is about the biggest
BS. We don't live
BS.
In a fixed universe. We live in a universe which is dynamic, which is determined by various processes which don't necessarily work in harmony, at least as we can see. But there's a higher ordering principle that you have to look at. As we mentioned, solar radiation, for example, is a factor. How come there were ice ages and warm periods on the planet before there was a single combustion engine? How come there's global warming on Mars right now? You think the one rover up there is putting out so much CO2 that it's warm?
Every planet is warming right now in our solar system. Why is that? They don't have, cars driving around. They don't have all these plants. It's all of our, it's the placement of our solar system in the universe, and how far we're away from the sun and how far we're away from the center of the galaxy and all sorts of things.
Yeah. And we're just beginning to find that out at the point at which they started cutting back on expenditures in the space program. I mean, this is why after Kennedy was assassinated, the moon program continued. But after 1972-73, it was cut dramatically.
Or
at
shifted.
A point at which we was...
I'm sorry, or shifted to black projects.
Yeah.
So keep going.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And so what we at the LaRouche movement have always insisted is that if you look at the direction that Kennedy was moving, where he was moving outside the Federal Reserve System to Treasury credit, direct Treasury credit. He was emphasizing science and technology. He said, you want to clean the environment? Let's develop higher temperature processes that are naturally cleaner. And after he was shot, you had the whole move on the campuses, and I saw this as a young student in 1967. The first lecture I attended was by Paul Ehrlich, who wrote The Population Bomb. And he looked into an audience of 18-year-olds and he said, 2 out of 3 of you should survive, but 1 out of 3 of you is too many. And you start telling that to college kids, and even younger children, and you induce a pessimism. Now, we were talking about this earlier. How do they succeed in this? Part of the brainwashing is to convince people that human beings are just another animal species, and that all we're interested in is our own comfort, sexual gratification, possessing things, having power over people like the alpha dog. If you can convince people that that's what human civilization is, then you can control it. But if human beings are given an understanding that we are uniquely creative in this universe, and that we were given a power to uncover the mysteries of how the universe works, and each step that we make in that direction, we move away from imperfection about our knowledge toward more perfect knowledge of what we're dealing with. That's how we can develop new technologies, so that you can have, for example, nuclear power uses a much tinier portion of fuel than you would with coal or with peat moss or charcoal to produce electricity.
They have cleaner nuclear power now where it's actually clean. I mean, it's a mass propaganda against nuclear power as well, but keep going. I keep saying keep going. I got to throw in my comments.
Remember that a lot of that came from Jane Fonda and the anti-nuke movement in the 60s and 70s that basically said that we're going to blow up the planet with nuclear power plants. You know, there have been so many catastrophes that they've predicted that didn't happen because scientists were allowed the freedom to make new discoveries and figure out how to harness these powers. For example, the sun is a fusion power device. How come we can't replicate what's going on in the sun? Well, we will sooner or later. And that will give us an enormous quantity of cheap power for mankind. Plasma technologies.
There are so many technologies, plus the black projects. They have so many technologies they're not sharing. There, we can get past this if they weren't hoarding the knowledge and shutting down scientists that actually have the ability to make a difference. That's the stuff we
But
need to
sorry,
end.
let me just go back to this point then, that if you tell children to use their creative powers to convince their governments and their parents to do with less, to stop eating meat, to stop driving, to give up the freedoms that have been fought for and defended by this country. If you can do that, then you will turn the human race into a dog-eat-dog world. This is the whole idea of natural selection, that we're just another animal. But if children are given this ability to touch their own creative powers through artistic endeavors, through science, through real economics, because the key to real economics is you unleash the creativity. This is what Hamilton argued when he wanted to have a national bank, a tariff policy, an infrastructure policy. He said that our greatest wealth is the productive power of our workforce. And we need to protect that and develop it. And that's how the American system developed as the most powerful economic motor on the planet. And that's what the Germans copied in the 1880s. That's what the Japanese copied with the Meiji Restoration at the same time. That's what led to the rebuilding of Germany after World War II and Japan after World War II. That could lead to the anti-colonial efforts in Africa and Asia, where countries have never been given that freedom because of the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. So we're on the edge of a potential new era, what Helge LaRouche calls a new paradigm, that would take what we've learned as Americans with the American system and make it global, a cooperative endeavor. And instead, what we're seeing is a British geopolitical model, which says the right people have to have control, the right people with the right ideas. And who are these? They're essentially the aristocracy, the oligarchy, the financial networks.
You so much for everything you do. You're just a beacon of light and
Well, you know, I've had some interesting opportunity to communicate with some of your viewers because people did send me emails after our last interview. And I welcome that because I think the more discussion, the more dialogue there is, the more clarity we can get. And hopefully also the cloud of pessimism can be broken up, and people will take on this the sense that as human beings, the only limitations we have are those we put on ourselves, or those we allow tyrants to put on us. And if we stand up against tyranny, we can win this fight. And we've got to stop this coup. We've got to stop the impeachment drive that's underway against Trump, not because we love Trump, but because we love our freedom and our country. And Trump right now, with all his imperfections, he's fighting. He's fighting, yeah.
In the battle, he's a soldier with us. He's the
That's
one
right.
leading, but he can't do it all himself. The front is everywhere.
Yeah. So if people want to continue to be in touch with me, please send me emails at harleysch@gmail.com. And I'll set you up with a link to my blog page so you can get a notification every time I post an article. You can go to laruchepack.com. And in fact, if you want, you can find on laruchepack.com. You'll have to search a little bit because our guys are not always so technically savvy. But you can find this report that Sarah mentioned, that CO2 reduction means mass murder. So look for that. If you can't find it, send me an email and I'll help you get it. But harleysch@gmail.com. And Sarah, I appreciate you for what you do because you're sometimes a lone voice out there. I'm sure you feel that.
I'm thinking about how I'm like, I'm going to get off the show and start emailing some of my other friends who do shows and say, they got to talk to Harley and get him on. So thank you so much for coming. I really.
Well, go ahead. I'm happy to do it. And good talking to you again. Okay, it's very good talking with you.